This is SG2 Perspectives, a conversation with SG2 experts and industry thought leaders about the biggest trends in healthcare and what we expect that's going to mean for the future of healthcare delivery. We're always looking for new ideas and topics from our listeners, so please reach out, share your ideas. You can email us at sg2perspectives@sg2.com or connect with us on LinkedIn or Twitter, and you can find links to all that in the show notes. Now, on to this week's episode.
We do know that COVID will be around, and we know that it is changing, and we want to make sure that we and the healthcare systems and the pharmaceutical manufacturers and we as a society are prepared to meet those new challenges that are going to be coming up and to be just as agile and nimble as this virus has been showing itself to be.
Hello, and welcome to SG2 Perspectives. I am your host, Kelly Richard, and today we'll be discussing the current progress on COVID-19 vaccination and the role of health systems. With me on the podcast today is Vizient's foremost vaccine expert, Senior Director of Pharmacy Sourcing and Program Service, Azra Baleem, PharmD, MBA. Thank you for being here, Azra.
Thank you for having me, Kelly.
I think we're going to just start with a little bit of a status update. The vaccination effort in the U.S. has been underway since late last year. We have two vaccines available, Pfizer and Moderna, and it looks like the Johnson & Johnson single dose vaccine is going to be available here shortly as well. So where do we stand in terms of both available vaccines and the number of those that have been administered to the population in the United States?
Yeah, we do have the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine available. And the great news about both of them is that each manufacturer has continued to ramp up its production, and we are continuing to get more and more doses from them every week. We can expect to see the Johnson & Johnson vaccine come out in the general public as early as the first week in March. Johnson & Johnson is committed to providing 20 million doses to the U.S. marketplace by the end of March and 100 million doses to the U.S. marketplace by the end of June. So that's really exciting and very encouraging from a supply perspective. It's very exciting for us to have more options for people to get vaccinated.
I've kind of been doing some sort of back of the envelope math here. If we have a population of approximately 330 million people and a quarter of them are kids, where do we stand in terms of having enough vaccines for the people that want them?
With the current production from Pfizer and Moderna, and if we combine that with what the number of doses are so far that we have promised from Johnson & Johnson, it looks like come July, we would have more than enough vaccine to inoculate every adult that would want it.
That's great news and fantastic, but there's a number of things to sort of think through there, including the fact that we have children that probably aren't going to be vaccinated anytime soon. Any updates sort of in that space? Is there a time when we think that kids of a certain age might start to be able to get the vaccine, or is that pretty far off?
Right now, we do know that both Pfizer and Moderna, as well as Johnson & Johnson, are actually starting an arm within their phase 3 clinical trial to enroll patients between the ages of 12 to 18 in order to study the effects of this vaccine on children above the age of 12. Pfizer did announce last week that they have completed that enrollment process for the number of participants that they were looking for. And so from this point forward, we do hope to eventually have more information and data as those studies are ongoing and continuing to enroll patients in that demographic.
My last question here about the general status is herd immunity and whether is that really possible without vaccinating kids? And if you add in potential challenges with vaccine hesitancy, what are your thoughts? Are we on our way to herd immunity anytime soon?
When we talk about something like herd immunity, there's a lot of other variables that we need to take into consideration, not just the number of people who've been vaccinated, but also the clinical epidemiology about the virus itself. Right now, we do know that there are other mutations of the virus, and we are still studying what the effects of those mutations are in terms of the disease progression and severity, but also how do these variants test against these current vaccines that are coming out. And so there's a lot of unanswered questions in terms of how these variants will impact that model for herd immunity. Those are definitely significant variables that we would have to take into consideration. If we did not have the variants and we didn't have other epidemiological things to consider, by July, we would have more than enough vaccine to inoculate everyone in the United States. And if the clinical trials from Pfizer and Moderna and Johnson & Johnson for ages 12 to 18 prove fruitful, we would begin vaccinations in that age group probably as early as August or September. However, if we look at the variants that are out there and some of the unknown answers we have to the questions of what impact these variants have, that would potentially impact significantly that herd immunity model.
So there's a lot of moving parts here when we think about the end. I think we can be a bit optimistic, it seems like, in terms of supply and the actual efficacy of these vaccines. So when we think about how vaccines are actually being delivered, so vaccinations instead of just vaccines. In the beginning, a lot of those vaccines were delivered to health systems as their frontline staff were kind of the priority group to get the vaccination first. But as we move on to vaccinating the broader population, we're seeing some other providers come into the mix to distribute the vaccine, retail pharmacies, clinics, maybe even nursing homes. So how do you view the ongoing role of health systems in these vaccination efforts?
Health systems are still an integral part in providing vaccinations to the community, first and foremost, in providing vaccinations for their own employees. We still have health systems in the United States who did not receive enough vaccine from their original shipments in order to cover everyone on their staff who wanted to get the vaccine. So we do have still some pockets across the country that are working to make sure that everyone in their staff who wanted to get the vaccine has the opportunity to do so. And going forward, I still see healthcare systems playing an integral role in the vaccinations of the population. But opening it up to retail pharmacies and clinics and nursing homes, as you've mentioned, is also incredibly important as part of this strategy. The virus is continuing to mutate. And so getting these vaccinations out into the community and getting as many people inoculated as quickly as possible is actually crucial to the overall strategy in preventing the virus mutations from taking over and transmission. As many distribution channels as we have, as many outlets as we have for healthcare providers to actually provide the physical vaccinations, I think it's great that the government is actually starting to leverage all of those channels in order to get this more quickly out to the population. Within the retail sector alone, when we look at all of the different retail pharmacies and community pharmacies that are out there, all of those providers have on average the opportunity to provide 40 to 50 million inoculations in 1 month based upon their staff and how they've performed during a normal flu season. So that's incredibly helpful to all areas of the country, whether you're in a rural area or an urban area. But our health systems also play a very critical role because when they come in to our healthcare systems for other types of needs, being able to get that vaccination at that site is so much more convenient for that patient. And we want to make sure that we're also capturing that opportunity right when it presents itself rather than making the patient wait.
I was just curious, when we're thinking about the administration of vaccines, we've heard a little bit and how important it is that we get as many done as possible really before a lot of these variants proliferate. We've heard a little bit about like mass vaccinations that maybe the government would be involved in. And I was just curious whether or not we're hearing that come about. Is that the route that we'll go or will it kind of be more of a decentralized model?
So the mass vaccination clinics that FEMA and the government are standing up are also an important part of the overall strategy. Again, this is really being done in order to make sure that we are getting as many shots out there as quickly as possible. It's also incredibly important in areas where the community may not have ready access to healthcare. We do have pockets in our country where the nearest pharmacy or the nearest hospital could be 20, 30 or more miles away from where patients live. And that's really where some of these mass vaccination sites are playing a really big role. Also in underserved communities and in big populated urban cities, these mass vaccination sites are really helping to speed up the rate at which we can inoculate the population.
I read something the other day that said the group that has received the most vaccinations are white women, but that's not necessarily the group of people that have been as highly impacted by COVID-19. And I was just curious if you know of any organizations that health systems are partnering with to reach more vulnerable populations.
there are many people in the United States who do not have ready access to the internet or are as familiar with trying to navigate the healthcare system when they're looking for their COVID-19 vaccine. I hear from a lot of patients from all across the country where they share their stories of how many hours a day they're spending trying to track down just where to go to get a COVID-19 vaccine for either themselves or someone within their family. One of the things that we encourage all of our healthcare systems who are providers for the vaccine in their community to do is to make sure that they actually are thinking about their marketing strategy and their overall communication channels. Many healthcare systems are used to targeting patients that have visited their healthcare center, let's say in the past year or in the past 2 years, or perhaps patients who are well established with some of their primary care physicians. But when we look at a broad-based campaign such as this COVID-19 vaccine, you really need to rethink your marketing strategy about how are you going to get the word out about the benefits that your healthcare system can provide and that you are providing vaccinations. How are you going to get that out to the general community and to a large group of individuals who probably have never visited your center before? That's not typically something that's contemplated in many marketing strategies or communication strategies at healthcare systems. And so that's really what we have been working on with some of our healthcare systems to encourage them to do that and help think through about what some of the nuances are for their communities that they're serving.
That's great. And do you have any examples or know how they're addressing those things? Any tactics that they're using to get after those folks that they've traditionally had a hard time creating any sort of touch points with?
Yes, absolutely. We have worked with a few institutions where they have started leveraging these alerts in their EMR system. So some of the EMR systems come built with the opportunity to automate these alerts out to patients. They're starting to leverage that technology so that way they're not having to tie up additional staff to make phone calls or follow-ups with people for appointments that were already established with their healthcare system. Some healthcare systems have gone so far as to develop a new app that people can download and put on their phone so that way they'll receive reminders and follow-ups and also information on if they're offering the COVID-19 vaccine that day, what's the criteria, and so on and so forth. But when we're targeting population, especially those over the age of 65 and those in rural communities, believe it or not, some of the most effective techniques were what we consider to be pretty old school. Simple flyer posting, advertising in the local newspaper, putting things out in terms of local TV commercials that kind of talk about the fact that that particular healthcare system or center is now offering this, getting the story on their local news channel, the 5 o'clock news or the 6 o'clock news. When people see it, they can say, oh, that's what's going on in my city or in my town or my community. And these are not communication channels that healthcare systems are used to using in the past because they didn't recognize that there is a lot of folks over the age of 65 who maybe have not visited their healthcare system or they're receiving some level of medical care, but it's through other means. This is where sometimes thinking outside the box really means thinking back to the days where we didn't have internet and we didn't have a cell phone, especially when we're talking about the elderly population.
Yeah, it's really interesting to have a situation in which we're not thinking so much about what does the payer mix look like or what are their specific health issues. It's like we're just trying to get everyone. And if you're older, even better, it's more of a broader net than we've had to cast in the past. So much more of a public health effort. Feel free to burst my bubble that there's a lot to feel positive about when it comes to vaccination progress. However, 2020, if we've learned anything, it's to anticipate the unexpected. In your view, what are the potential wild cards or the unexpected challenges, or maybe even expected, that are not getting a ton of airtime when it comes to herd immunity or mass vaccination?
So when we talk about things like herd immunity or mass vaccinations, there's a lot for us to be thankful for, a lot of things to be positive about. The fact that we're able to have a vaccine in such a short amount of time, for us to have it from multiple pharmaceutical manufacturers who are experienced in this area, and for us to have it come out so quickly and have enough supply to be able to vaccinate our country, those are all really, really strong positives. Some of the challenges that I foresee going forward, though, is really what is going on as it relates to the variants. We have 4 identified variants that are out there, and all of the epidemiological studies are showing each one of these variants to be more transmissible for the ability for them to produce a more severe disease and also for them to reduce reduce vaccine efficacy. And so those are things that we know are going to be challenges for us going forward. But I'm optimistic about how far we've come in knowing how this virus operates and how far we've come as a society in developing therapies and vaccines to help us mitigate some of the risk associated with it. One of the challenges I see going forward is how patients are going to respond to getting back to normal. There were a lot of different services that patients had the opportunity to test out and experience for the first time in 2020. Number one, virtual office visits, being able to utilize new apps and different types of technology, whether it was to monitor their heart and blood pressure and transmit that to their primary care physician, or whether it was some other type of remote service. The challenge in general for healthcare systems is, from a vaccination standpoint, once those vaccines are rolling out more and more, how does the patient behavior change as a response to that?
That's a great point. I've talked to at least a lot of health systems that have just said, we're ready to go back to business as usual. That's one sector. Or they may even say there's physicians that are ready to go back to how we used to do things versus a whole other group that is ready to completely change things. And they're all virtual, all digital. It should be interesting to understand that there's probably some sort of in-between state that is the reality of what patients are willing to do and how they're going to behave in the age post-COVID.
Exactly. And when we talk about the vaccines, I mentioned the variants earlier. We have some of our vaccine suppliers that are already looking into what can we do about the additional variants. Some are exploring the opportunity to have what we call a multivalent vaccine. So while we have a COVID vaccine today, the vaccines going forward for COVID may look differently. For 2022 and beyond, there may be COVID-19 vaccine 2.0, one that's multivalent that contains other types of materials in order to address all of the variants at once. There may be additional boosters for the vaccines that may be administered annually or once every 2 years in order to maintain immunity in an individual. So these are some of the things that we should start thinking about now that may be possibilities in the future, as instead of looking at the vaccination campaign right now as a one and done. We do know that COVID will be around and we know that it is changing, and we want to make sure that we and the healthcare systems and the pharmaceutical manufacturers and we as a society are prepared to meet those new challenges that are going to be coming up and to be just as agile and nimble as this virus has been showing itself to be.
Right. And not to get ahead of ourselves, but it seems like those would be fantastic capabilities to have were we to have another virus come along and potentially to prevent additional pandemics.
Absolutely. I think that on the subject of additional pandemics, that is the reality. For many folks, they may or may not remember when we had to deal with the avian bird flu, and then when we had to deal with the swine flu in 2009, and now we're dealing with the coronavirus. And so I think that in general, as a society, there will always be these emergence potentially of other types of viruses or diseases. But that's the beauty from the other side in terms of innovation. We have the opportunity to continuously improve and innovate, not only just from a drug manufacturing side, but also as a society and as a health system side. How are we going to rise to meet all of those new challenges that we don't even know exist yet, but have the potential to exist? If we ask ourselves those questions on a continuous basis, pandemic or not, we would be in the best scenario we possibly could be to overcome those challenges when they do arise.
Absolutely. It's really developing the skills and the capabilities to meet challenges that we don't even know are challenges yet. Well, thank you, Ezra. I really appreciate you coming on the podcast, and I hope to have you on again soon.
Well, thank you for having me. This was great.
This has been another episode of SG2 Perspectives. If you like what you are hearing, please subscribe and don't forget to rate and review. We'd love to hear from you. Please connect with us on LinkedIn or Twitter at SG2 Healthcare. You can also reach us via email at sg2perspectives@sg2.com. Reach out and let us know what healthcare trends are most important to you. Please also listen and subscribe to our colleague Dr. Tom Villanueva's Modern Practice podcast on Vizient's Medical Leadership Channel. Tom discusses key healthcare trends through the clinical leadership lens. You can find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you for listening.